David and Goliath. In the verses that we've already studied, we saw where the Philistines and the Israelites gathered their armies together to do battle against each other. The Philistines were on one mountain, the Israelites on the other, and in between was a valley. This was the Valley of Elah, according to verse number 2. And the Philistines had this champion that came out each day and issued a challenge and also defied the armies of Israel. But his challenge was, y'all pick you out a man, and you send him over, and me and him a fight. If he wins, we'll be your servants. If I win, then y'all will be our servants. And so far, we haven't seen anybody that was willing to accept the challenge. And the reason is because of what we read about this champion. Obviously, I'm talking about Goliath. But he was over 9 feet tall, so he was a massive individual. He obviously was very strong, very powerful. And you know that because of the different armor that he wore. Some of those things we talked about, one piece, the coat of mail that he had on weighed approximately 78 pounds, give or take. And then he had a spear that was like a weaver's beam. The staff of it and the head of it weighed somewhere around 15 pounds. So he had to be a strong man just to carry all that around and not be cumbered by it. So he's a tall man, he's a strong man, he's obviously very experienced in battle because he's a champion. And you don't get the title of champion without doing something to earn that title. So he's obviously skilled at war. He's got a lot of experience. And nobody from Saul on down is willing to accept his challenge. But whenever we ended up, we saw there in verse 13 where the three oldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. So these three boys are there with Saul, and their names are Eliab, Abinadab, and Shammah. None of these three have been willing to step up and accept the challenge. But like I said, whenever we closed out on Sunday night, I'm not going to throw stones at them. I'm not going to be too critical of them boys for not stepping up to the challenge, because highly likely that none of us would have either had we been in their situation. But in verse 14, the Bible speaks again of David. It tells us that he was the youngest. He was the youngest son of Jesse's eight boys, and the three eldest followed Saul. In verse 15, but David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. Now it says he went and returned from Saul because, according to the previous chapter, he had been there with Saul playing the harp whenever Saul was troubled by this evil spirit that was sent from the Lord. And Saul had grown to love David greatly, it says in 16:21, so much so that David became his armor bearer. And Saul sent and asked that Jesse would let him stay there with him. And he had for some time. I don't know how much time had passed here, but it looks to me like whenever Saul had to go out with his armies to meet these Philistines is when David went back home. Whether it was then or some other time, David went back, and he gets back to what he was doing before he ever went to be with Saul. He goes back to feeding his father's sheep there at Bethlehem. That was his responsibility. That was his job, and he did that, and he did it faithfully. Did a very good job. But the Bible says in verse 16, and the Philistine drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. This is an ongoing thing for 40 days, every morning, every afternoon, every morning, every afternoon. Goliath comes out and he says the same thing again and again and again for 40 days. He makes this challenge, and nobody for the 40 days accepts the challenge. verse 17, "And Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren." So Jesse sends David to check on his brothers, and when he sends him, he has him take some food with him that obviously would be a blessing to his brothers and maybe even some of their friends. But also in verse 18 it says, "And carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousand." These three boys, and I call them boys, they were probably men, they're in a group of 1,000 and they have a captain over them. And Jesse, their father, wants David to take some cheese to their captain. And this is just a way of showing appreciation, showing respect, and trying to be a blessing to these people that are in the military. And I think that's the way it ought to be. That respect and appreciation ought to be demonstrated to the people that serve the armed forces of the United States of America. And it sickens my heart. It really does. It just sickens my heart to see the contempt and disrespect that people in this country show toward the people that serve our country. I don't like it. It just makes my heart sick to see that. And it's really sad, too, to think of a lot of the ones that are doing it, the type of people they are, the character that they've demonstrated in their lives. They don't have the morals and integrity of an alley cat, a lot of them, and yet want to show disrespect to our military. I don't understand it. Hopefully all of us in here understand tonight that we have the freedoms that we have and enjoy the greatness in this country that we enjoy because of men and women that serve in the armed forces for our country. And not just present day, but I'm talking about in the past, you know, generations of people that have put their lives on the line, and many of them made the ultimate sacrifice for our country. I've said it before, I've never had to be in a war. And so all of my life, you know, I've just lived in this country here and enjoyed the benefits of living in this country. And I've enjoyed what I have at the expense of others because of others that have gone and served and paid the price. And many still now serving here and abroad in other places. And I just think, you know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, old-school, crazy, whatever you want to call me. I just feel like if somebody openly disrespects the military, they ought to be locked up in jail for it. They ought to. They'll be put in jail. Or even better, made to leave the country. You know? I mean, you're going to live in this country and enjoy the benefits of this country, but then disrespect the people that provide those benefits to us? To me, a person like that doesn't deserve to live in this country. They ought to be sent somewhere else. But if you'll read and pay attention to the Old Testament, and I'm not just saying all this stuff, this is a biblical principle I'm talking about. You read the Old Testament and study just the nation of Israel, and you find that they were a very patriotic people. They loved their country, and they believed in defending their country, which, by the way, Israel still believes in defending their country. You fool with Israel, and I'll tell you right now, they'll put a bomb on you, buddy. They ain't going to put up with it. And you want to talk about just the greatness of God? Just look at that one little country right there that nation after nation has tried to annihilate and get rid of, and yet they're still here now. That little small nation there. God's favor and blessing is on those people. But they were a patriotic people. They loved their country, and they believed in fighting for their country. God led them to be in these battles and fight for their land. And you see here in Jesse a man that wanted his sons. I just think about him and how he's raising his sons here. First of all, he's got three boys that are in the military. And then he sends David out there to check on those three boys, and when he sends them, he makes sure that they that he takes a gift to give to the leader of his sons. He's obviously instilling patriotism in the heart of his children. What a blessing that is. You know, whether you have a child that goes into the military or not, I believe parents should raise their children to respect this country, to respect the flag of this country, and respect the military of this country. That's what I believe. I think we are failing as parents if we don't teach our children to have respect for this country and respect for the people that serve our country. And I believe that's what Jesse did with his children. But in verse 18 it says, "And carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their thousand, and look how thy brethren fare." Just check on your brothers and see how they're doing. "And take their pledge." A pledge, if you run references to the word pledge in the Old Testament, it had to do with making a promise. There were times when an actual article of clothing or something was given as like collateral or a promise for something. So a pledge is a promise. And when he says take their pledge, you take their promise that they're doing okay, that they're all right, and you bring that back to me and let me know. He was concerned about his sons. Verse 19, "Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines." Now this shows you here that even though no person had accepted the challenge, that the two armies were still battling every day. Goliath would come out and make his challenge morning, evening, and when nobody would accept that, then the two armies would fight. And then at some point, you know, Goliath would come out, and I don't know if he was fighting all the time or if he was fighting in one location and the rest of the people, you know, or a lot of the other people fighting somewhere else. But we'll see in a moment when he would show up in an area and issue his challenge, or just through his presence, the people would run away scared. But they're still fighting here in this valley. Verse 20 says, "David rose up early in the morning and left the sheep with a keeper." Notice when he left his post, you see that? When he left his post, his place of responsibility, he made sure that somebody else was there to do his job. See that? That is a good principle to live by. You have a position, you have a responsibility, you have a job, and you know you can't be there for that, you got to be out of position, then you know what you ought to do? Make sure somebody is there to fill that position. There's a good principle to live by in every area of life. Were you talking about in church, outside of church, whatever the case, you have a job responsibility, you do that. If you can't, you get somebody to stand in that you trust and know will be there to take care of that responsibility. That's what David did. He left the sheep with the keeper and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. So why did he do it? Because that's what his father told him to do. Isn't that a marvel? That a son actually did what his daddy told him to do. Isn't that a marvel? Do you know Paul tells us in 2 Timothy chapter number 3 that in the last days perilous times are going to come? That means rough times, bad times are going to come in the last days. And he gives a list there of reasons why things are going to get so bad in the last days. You ought to go over there and read that if you never have, and just see some of the reasons why it's going to get so bad. He just gives a list of a lot of things. And you know one of those things that he puts in there? Disobedient to parents. He says in the last days, a mark of the last days, and one of the problems in the last days, and what's going to cause trouble in the last days, is children being disobedient to their parents. And I think it's pretty clear that that's going on now, don't you? Which now, honestly, it's went on forever. I mean, as far back as you can think, I mean, you got Adam and Eve, right? They got two boys. They got Cain and Abel, and Cain kills Abel. Well, I know his mama and daddy didn't tell him to do that. So obviously there's disobedience in his heart, and that's all the way back at the beginning. So it's not like children being disobedient is something that just showed up in the last days. That's not what it means. What it means is it's going to get worse in the last days. Not that it's going to show up for the first time. It's just something that's going to get worse and worse and be a much bigger problem in the last days. And I think we see that. I mean, think about your own lives, those of you here tonight. Were you obedient to your parents always like you needed to be? What's that? No way. Brother Tim's the only honest one in the bunch, I reckon. All of us. Yeah. Amen. That's one of the big differences between back then and now, though, see. I was going to say that. You know, my opinion of the matter is one reason why that problem is going to get worse in the last days is not because necessarily the children are going to get worse. The parents are going to get worse. And because parents won't do like they're supposed to, let's be real about it. Just be real honest about it, okay? How many of you in here would have been more disobedient than you were had you known you could have got away with it? Know what I mean? I mean, in all reality, that's even as adults, that's why a lot of adults don't do more bad stuff than they do now, because they're afraid they can't get away with it. If they knew they could get away with it, not get caught, they'd probably do it. But what kind of kept us in check, not that we didn't disobey, okay, but, you know, I understood this, that if I did wrong, if I disobeyed, and my mother found out about it, I understood there was going to be some serious repercussion for that, okay? I understood that. And I'm quite sure I'd have done more things wrong than I did if I thought I could have got away with it. So why do you think disobedience is going to be more prevalent? I think it's just that the parents are going to get more and more laxed in disciplining their children, and so the kids are going to get more and more disobedient is what I think about that. I did not. When was that? Is that right? Was it a boy? Boy killed his mother. Over what? Because she was making him do laundry. Is that? Fighting over dirty laundry. And he shot her. Did y'all know, any of y'all know? Y'all know the family? Know who it is? Good gracious, that's awful. Yeah. Is that right? I didn't know you could still do that. Well, I know you could do it when I went to school, because I got several of them. But I didn't know you could still get away with something like that nowadays. Yeah, when I went to high school, we had a vice principal that he definitely believed in the board of education. He really did. He'd light you up, buddy. He'd get you good. But I do, that's my thought on that, is that the reason why disobedience in children is going to continuously ramp up is because of parents not disciplining. But also you have to think about it like this too. We have created a society now to where parents have to walk on eggshells in how they handle their children. Because if you discipline them, all they got to do is go to school the next day and tell somebody about it or whatever. Next thing you know, you're in trouble. You're in jail. So it's just a rough thing, and we're reaping what we've sown as a country. You know, it's a sad deal. And if kids today got some of what Brother Tim and Brother Scott got, but really, I mean, a parent nowadays would that discipline like that, they consider that abuse. They really consider it abuse. My mother used to whip me with a razor strap. That's what she whipped me with, you know. You got one at home. That's right. We had a razor strap that hung on the wall in our living room, and not one day was there ever a razor put on that thing. But it was put on me several times. But hey, yeah. It didn't warp me mentally and, you know, cause me to be a psycho. I turned out all right. Y'all turned out all right. The people in this room, that you turned out fine, didn't you? Turned out all right for me. A what? Switch? Yeah. Yep, that was a... Right. Hey, we're talking about something the Bible teaches. We're not just talking about something that, you know, was a person's opinion. We're talking about what the Bible says. The Bible clearly teaches that parents are to use the rod of correction in dealing with their children. There has to be discipline, and if you don't, you're going to raise a rebel. That's just all there is to it. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that now. But anyway, it says here that he did what his dad had commanded him to do. And he came to the trench as the host was going forth to fight and shouted for the battle. So they're getting ready to go out and fight, and they're all, you know, they're hollering, that was a common thing. That's what we call psyching herself up. You know, they get ready knowing they're going into battle. Verse 21, for Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage. So he had somebody with him. And he left that person in charge of his carriage. He would delegate in every situation. If he couldn't be at his post and do what he was supposed to do, he delegated. He made sure there was somebody there to take care of the responsibility. So he leaves the carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage. Then he ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. So he comes out, says the same thing he's been saying, but this time there's a little bit difference. And the difference is that David heard it. It's the first time he's been there, first time he's heard it. But it's a significant thing, because the story's fixing to take a turn here. Verse 24, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were sore afraid. So just his presence, you know, they take off running. They get out of Dodge because they're scared to death of him. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel is he come up, which is what he had said back in verse 10. The Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. So they say, surely to defy Israel is he come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. So whoever would step up and take the challenge and actually win would be a wealthy man. The king would enrich him with great riches. He'd give him his daughter to be married to, so he'd get to be son-in-law to the king, which you would, you know, under normal circumstances, most people would consider that a good thing. And then make his father's house free in Israel, kind of like a tax-exempt thing, you know, where they didn't have to pay a bunch of taxes, maybe weren't in bondage to the king. They'd have freedom. So whoever did this would, you know, they get a lot of benefits from it. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? So that we just read in the verse, those people saying that, David didn't hear that. So he asked a question, what will be done to the person that does kill this Philistine? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? You can tell right away that David is upset about what he's heard Goliath say. And he's taking it as a reproach, not just on Israel, it was, but he takes it even further than that. If you look at the verse, he says, what shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach from Israel? So he considered what he's doing a reproach on Israel. But notice he says, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of Israel? And what he said is, the armies of the living God. Now, whenever Goliath stepped out and made his offer, in verse 10 again, he said, I defy the armies of Israel. Because the Philistines, you know, they didn't really recognize the God of Israel as the sovereign God. They had their own gods they worshipped. So his idea is, I'm just defying these people, the armies of Israel. But David sees it as a reproach on Israel and a reproach on God. Because David says, who is this fellow that he would defy the armies of the living God? And his attitude is something needs to be done here. You know, we can't let this guy get by with this. And who does he think he is? This uncircumcised. Circumcision, you know, was a Jewish thing. That wasn't a Gentile thing. It was a Jewish thing. And the Jews often referred to the Gentiles as uncircumcised or as the uncircumcision. That's what they would call them. But David's whole mindset is, who does he think he is? That he's going to reproach our armies and defy our God. Who does he think he is? We need to do something about this. Something's got to be done. You can see that he has a completely different spirit about him than any of the rest of the people in the army. He doesn't appear intimidated. He's not afraid. He's not scared. He's not running off, you know, hightailing it out of there because of what Goliath said. He's thinking, hey, we need to do something about this. In verse 27, the people answered him after this manner, saying, so shall it be done to the man that killeth him. Back verse 25 is what they say to him. This is what the king is going to do. Going to make him rich. Going to give him his daughter. Going to make his father's house free. That's what they say. This is what happened to the man. Now, verse 28. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men. And Eliab was happy for David. Is that what it says? No. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. He gets mad because of what David has said. And he said, why camest thou down hither? What are you doing down here? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? You see what he's doing? He's mocking him, belittling him, making light of him. Who'd you leave your little handful of sheep with back there in the wilderness? why don't you just go on back home to your little flock of sheep you got there? He's just really making fun of him, making light of him, making out as if his responsibility in taking care of his father's sheep was insignificant, not important, and he didn't really have any business being down there. And then he makes accusations against him. He says, I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. He said, you just nosy, you know. You just wanted to come down here and see what was going on. That's what it was. You got pride in your heart, and you're trying to show out in front of these people here by saying, you know, trying to act tough, by speaking up. He makes these terrible accusations after he's already belittled his own brother. And here's a question. Why do you think Eliab got so mad? Why do you think he got so upset with his own brother about that? Yeah. It exposed him is what it did. David's courage and willingness to accept the challenge or at least say something needs to be done about this exposed the cowardness that was in Eliab's heart, because he's been there all these 40 days, and every time that Goliath has come out and made his challenge, you know what he could have done? He could have stepped up and said, hey, I'll take that challenge right there. I'll go out, I'll be the man, and I'll fight him. But he didn't, and his other two brothers didn't. So he's trying to quieten David down and belittle him, get him just to kind of run away and go back home, because it's exposing what's in him, see. And that's oftentimes the reason why people respond the way they do. It's because the way a person acts is revealing flaws in their character, problems in their lives. And so they want to, instead of them addressing those flaws and correcting the problems that they obviously have, they want to bring that other person down to their level. You understand that? They don't want to come up here. They don't want to get better in their own life. They want to bring the other people down to where they are. I've seen that happen multitudes of times. I've seen it in church. I can't tell you the times I've seen it in church, to where you have somebody that clearly is excited about the Lord and excited about church and just growing in their relationship. You can tell they're on fire and love God and just as excited as they can be and wanting to do things, wanting to get out and knock on doors and talk to people. And then I've seen people actually do everything they can to pour water on that fire. Just put it out. You know why they do that, though? Because the excitement and zeal in those people is exposing the lack thereof in their own lives. Instead of them looking at that person saying, boy, that's how I need to be in my life. I need to be more excited about God. I need to be more fired up. I'm going to try to get that way in my life. Instead of being that way, they try to pull that person down. Sometimes your biggest critics, you hear me well, I know what I'm talking about. Sometimes your biggest critics will come from within the family of God. Some of your biggest critics and the ones that will try to hinder you the most will come from within God's family. Come sometimes from within your own church family. You have to watch out for the brethren. Isn't that sad, though, really? We already have to watch out for people that are lost and people that are in the world and what they try to do to us. We all have to put up with that. And that in and of itself is enough. But then we have to watch out for our own Christian brothers and sisters. Be careful that we don't let them pour water on our fire. You have to watch it. That's sad. Within our family, we ought to be encouraging one another, haven't we? Inspiring one another. And if I see somebody that's fired up and doing something for God, if I don't want to get fired up and do something for God, the very least I ought to do is just keep my mouth shut Don't try to hinder them. Let them do what they're doing. And really, the best thing be join in with them. Get in on that. But if I'm not, just be quiet. Leave them alone. Let them serve the Lord. We're going to stop here tonight. We'll pick up verse 29 next time.